Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
And I'm Dane, the carpenter head.
I get it. I get that one. Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games, where we discuss our favorite hobby, share our thoughts with you, and play some games sometimes. This time, we're doing a how-to. How to do a thing.
How to do a
thing. How to do the thing.
Oh!
I did that by accident. So, as listeners of the show probably know, we like to do a spooky Halloween special once a year. And also sometimes we make an episode like this about how to do a thing from media as a, you know, a trope or like a specific movie or something. As a role-playing encounter or adventure or whatever. And tonight, we are talking about John Carpenter's The Thing, and also the 2011 The Thing prequel, sort of, I think.
The re-prequel. The remake prequel.
Yeah, because it was basically a remake, but it also, like, fit into the beginning of the first movie. And I think was just fine. Some people don't like it. They're purists. But, you know, obviously the first one is the classic. But the new one was also a good movie.
Yeah. And just in case somehow you're a young Gen Zer who stumbled into this podcast for some reason, and you're like, what the hell are you guys talking about? Among Us is also this.
Among Us is very, yeah.
But, you know, Among Us was based on The Thing.
Yeah, and Among Us is also, like, a multiplayer friend slop game where the point is to, like, play the social interaction. We're going to get into a little bit of that. But we're going to start, I guess.
Well, yeah, so our how to run The Thing. All right, we're going to, as always, talk about kind of what makes The Thing The Thing.
Yeah.
And like how that translates to a role playing. So like
what are the things that are setting, this movie, right? That made this movie a good movie and also unique in its ideas and the situations it presents. And then yeah, obviously in the context of a role playing game.
Yeah. So we're gonna talk about the setting, the kind of crux of the, you know, something new and unpredictable, right? The monster. Which is the monster. That's what that category is called. And then, like, the end goal, the rescue escape of it, and then, like, the risk of infection and, like, how that is kind of the basis of why it's going to be fun. Mm. And then NPCs in this role-playing scenario.
Pretty important.
And, like, the core mechanic, the infection, like, counter, which is what the infection is going to be based on. So, I guess, and we forgot to put this in, a quick recap of those who maybe haven't seen The Thing or it's been a while.
Yeah.
So the movie, John Carpenter's The Thing, was based on a short story from like the 50s.
Probably.
I forgot. I've never actually gotten to reading it. But anyways, so Arctic Research Station. Or Antarctic Research Station.
Yeah.
To be totally correct.
Precise.
Discover a monster. Some, you know, the 2011 remake, you actually get to see the ship and the alien.
That it is, yeah, they, like, remove any ambiguity about that.
Yeah.
It is a spaceship crashed in the ice, frozen, and they pull the thing right out of it in a block of ice and bring it back to the research station. And right, they're like, wow, big science discovery. We're all scientists. We're super into this. And then it escapes.
Yeah. So monster frozen in ice.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what it does. They don't know anything about it. And then, like classic humans, they poke it with a stick.
Mm-hmm.
See what it does. Turns out it is a collection of... It can be a single cell.
Yeah.
But it spreads itself. So it's like an infection. You can't see it. And then all of a sudden, all your cells are
the thing.
Part of the monster, the thing.
Yeah.
and they do weird stuff and make you look really gross, and then you kill things.
So, yeah, watch it. Really great, like, effects, creature effects, mutations, and it, you know, it sprouts, like, fangs and claws and divides itself into multiple things, and a head gets cut off, and the head is walking around with another head on it, and is, you know, that sort of, like, mutation monster body horror stuff. And the scary thing is, after it, like, kills the first guy and everyone's scared of it, they kind of realize, like, oh, it could be
any one of us.
Yeah, it could be any one of us. And they're trapped. That's the, you know.
So, let's talk, we'll go through more of the movie as we talk through these things that make up, that are pillars of the thing.
That make the thing the thing.
So, isolated setting, right? The nature of the Antarctic Research Station is, it's in Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody else around.
Yeah.
It's not like you can call for help and the police come.
Yeah. You can't, like, run down the street to the next house. The research station is a couple of buildings. Some of them connected and some of them not connected. So you have to go outside to, like, you know, get to the tool shed or get supplies from a thing or whatever. And you can't really run away.
Right.
Like, you could, but you would just die out there.
Right.
So that's, like, not really a choice.
There's, so somehow there needs to be a limit on that. So you can't just, like, load up a backpack and walk into the woods and, like, you know, survive for the next 3 months while you make it back to civilization. Right? It's like, we don't have enough fuel in the what do they call those? I don't know, the cat crawlers, ice crawlers or whatever. Like, we can't make it to another station.
Yeah, we couldn't drive to the coast to catch a boat.
Right.
We, like, you're dependent on resupply and support from the outside. And if you don't know when that's coming, or you did call, but it's like, oh, 24 hours before anyone could even be here. So, yeah, you're isolated, no immediate help. The environment around you is hostile, so you have to stick together and you have to stay in this place. And, you know, you could do it. You could do it on, like, an oil rig. That would work, you know.
I think, yeah, there's,
like,
there's,
as long as you broke a boat or something, if you made it, the like, there's other places.
There's a few. And not very many, right?
Yeah.
So, like, Arctic or, you know, Antarctic, right? I would say somewhere in the desert, too. You know, like, an oil, maybe, I guess, just oil rig in the desert.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, you could be in the ocean, too, on, like, an oil rig or, you know, shipwrecked on an island. That would also work. And then, getting into, like, extreme sci-fi, like the...
You could do it on, like, a moon base or something.
Or on a ship. It would be a little more difficult just because of... or at least in our experience, it would be more difficult. Because, like, the very first how-to we did was Predator. And then the very first, like, Halloween special was also Predator. But then I, like, overcooked a, you know, a sci-fi fantasy world. And it takes a lot of the like, horror out of it because it's so fantastical.
Yeah.
Anyways, so it's not like...
A lesson that we kind of came away from with that is that horror has, in our experience, tended to work best when the people, the characters that are, that the players are playing are as close to, like, regulars.
Right.
As can be, in as familiar a setting as possible.
Yeah.
Like the night shift at the gas station that you ran, where me and Brian both got to pick funny guys to be, but, like, this is regular, and we've probably done this a bunch of times, and it's a very relatable thing to just, like, be working late or, you know, to hate your job, and something everyone has experience with. And then something freaky starts to happen.
Yeah.
So the more,
the more grounded it is.
Putting it like on an alien moon where, you know, the air outside is toxic, so you have to stay in the thing. But, like, why are we here? And then, you know, questions come up, like, well, what sort of equipment do we have in this, like, future sci-fi? Can I, like, just make a thing that... You probably want to avoid stuff like that. You want to pick something... It doesn't have to be so familiar that it's everyone's life experience, but, like, something that people have, like, seen in a movie.
Yeah. And, like, the... I'd say if you were to do something in sci-fi future in, like, space on an alien moon or whatever, that's probably more going to... Or alien is probably going to be a better...
And there's Mothership, which we've played and talked about before. So, like, if that's what you want to do, there's that. We'd recommend not going that far out for doing the thing.
Because one of the cruxes or one of these pillars is the something new aspect, right? So the more familiar the setting, so it's on Earth, it's in the Antarctic, which is still pretty unfamiliar, but at least it's familiar in terms of, like, you know, kind of how you could at least imagine how life would be like. And then something new comes along, right? An unknown creature, an unidentified thing.
Yeah. Is brought in.
Right? Which is important because it's unpredictable, so you don't exactly know how it's going to react. You don't know all the laws that govern it. Like, does the cold hurt it?
Right.
And then you learn that stuff by making mistakes. So, like, you force it out into... the Arctic tundra or the Antarctic tundra, and you're like, okay, well, it's probably dead, right? We win. And then, oops, it comes back through the window later that night, and you're like, okay, well, we learned something.
That didn't kill it, and all it did was just, like, get it out of our sight. We lost track of it when we did that. So that's a mistake. We need to think of a new way to come at this, and also a way to try and, like, keep our eyes on it.
Right. Or, like, in, well, maybe it's been too long because I can't remember exactly how. Maybe the monster doesn't come back, but one of the NPCs turns. And then you know that, okay, it's infectious. It's not just we're fighting one monster that can kill us. If we get infected, and we don't know how that happens yet.
Right.
Like, is it airborne? Does it have to be physical? So we don't know how it happens, but we know that it can infect us and turn us. And, like, are they on the same team? Are they coordinated? You know, that's all stuff that you can have fun with as a game master, kind of making up your own thing. I believe in the, like, in the source material, it's, they are not, like, a coordinated hive mind. They're all individual creatures. They never really attack in tandem.
Yeah, I don't think so. Because also, and when we get to this part, the idea of, like, the test, it didn't seem like, one, it didn't always seem like they knew whether or not they were infected until, and that's a fun thing, and we'll talk about that, how you could play with that later, but it didn't always seem like the ones who were infected knew that they were a monster until, like, they were threatened.
They reached critical mass.
Yeah.
Or something.
And, you know, some of them allowed themselves to be subjected to the tests. And I don't quite remember exactly who was and wasn't and what stage, but, yeah. My impression was, like, it was more like an animal that spreads through this, like, cellular takeover infection thing. And at some point, the infected person is entirely other thing, but even at that point, they might still be, they're either lying and, like, you know, behaving in such a way to keep their cover on purpose, or they're behaving as they would because they don't know that they're a monster yet. And that's, something you could play with.
Yeah. So we mentioned the test, right? So if you're unfamiliar with the source material, there were a couple tests that they pieced together through, you know, making mistakes and trial and error and some, well, some giant leaps in like line of reasoning, but apparently they were right. Anyways, so in the original The Thing, or John Carpenter's The Thing, that's not an original, but in John Carpenter's The Thing, the like, what's the lead character? I think
there might actually even be an older movie.
There could be.
In addition to the like the
short,
you
know, story,
the horror story, uh-huh, that you mentioned, I think there might be an even older like version of the movie.
Yeah, that tracks. I think so.
Before John Carpenter's 80s
yeah, I
version.
Think there's. I think yeah.
I think there might be a 50s version.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway,
I believe so. Haven't seen that one.
Haven't seen that one. But there is a bit in the newest one, in the 2011 one, that I thought was a really good way for them to make that leap, because I think she finds these, like,
yeah,
two titanium pins that were in a guy's leg, and it was, like, from a climbing injury or something, and it was something that a couple of them are like, oh, yeah, that, you know, our buddy.
Skarsgård or whatever.
Yeah, he had like, a... He had a couple pins holding his leg bone together because of an old injury, and they're like, well, what are they doing in a bloody puddle in the shower,
mm-hmm,
instead of in his leg where they belong?
So, let's just keep going on that one then. In the 2011 thing, the ad hoc test was, they figured out that the thing could not replicate inorganic material.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so fillings, piercings,
titanium leg pins, stuff like that. If someone had that and got infected, the thing would
reject that inorganic material.
Yeah, would just
material.
Get rid of the bits of metal because it didn't need those, and it just like fully, subsumed the host body. Until all of the tissues were thing tissue.
Yeah. And then in the John Carpenter's The Thing, the characters figured out that each individual cell of this organism was alive and like had its own survival instincts. So they like, and that they got that because the head fell off of one of the infected bodies when they were burning the body, and the head melted off and scuttled away.
Yeah. And they're like, oh. Oh, no.
So they drew blood and heated up a coil of copper wire or whatever it was.
I thought that was switched. I thought that was the 2011 one where they have blood samples in a petri dish and, like, heat it, and then mm-hmm. it starts to squiggle away from the heat.
They might have done that as well in the 2011 one, but that's like Kirk Russell with the flamethrower.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, so have a little petri dish full of blood. You stick a hot poker in there. If the blood screams and curdles and like and jumps, then you're infected.
Mm-hmm. And before they had like a scientific test method, it was like, well, show me your fillings.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, see, I got my fillings. I'm human. And then, well, I don't have any fillings. So that, you know, the first test that they devised, very imperfect, because I never had fillings. Like, I can't remember if that's always been true or not. And a lot of tension and paranoia and mistrust comes of that. And you got to figure out a better, a more sure method to figure out who's who.
Well, and I think you should stop at the imperfect method for the role-playing
thing.
That's,
yeah.
Because spending time devising a blood test that can say with 100% certainty is bad, because we want to keep it uncertain who's infected, which player characters are infected, which ones are not. Because then there can be no metagaming and, like, no, like, sabotage, purposeful sabotage. Because I think the fun thing about doing this would be everybody tries their best.
Yeah.
And when shit gets fucked up, when it all comes out at the end, you can kind of be like, oh, well, that's probably when you got infected. And that's why, like,
mm-hmm.
you were so bad at doing your job.
Yeah.
So, if the... I think one of the... why they couldn't use a microscope on the blood is because after a certain amount of time, all the cells just look like human cells because it did such a good job replicating it. So that's why they had to stick it with a poker.
Mm-hmm.
Or they smashed all the microscopes. I can't remember how that went down.
Might have been both, even.
Could have been both.
You could use both.
But yeah, so something like that. So maybe the blood doesn't, you know, jump when it gets heated, but you could use a microscope, but you only have a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it can help, and it can narrow it down, but it, you can't be 100%.
Yeah.
The test can't give you 100%
certainty. And, yeah, you should stop at an imperfect, you know, quick test, because this next bit.
Yes, because there should be a time limit, mm-hmm. right? Because the goal is to get rescued or, like, survive till help arrives.
Yeah.
Right? So there's some time limits should be imposed on that. And that's why you can't make 100% perfect tests, is because you just don't have time for that. You got to do all this other stuff. Right? So, like, the end goal is survival. There needs to be some steps that need to happen for that to be a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And that's... and they have to happen timely,
mm-hmm.
which incentivizes going out on your own and, like, engaging with the story and, like,
splitting up,
you know,
which is, you know, contraindicated mm-hmm. by every horror movie. So, like, you know, you shouldn't do that. You should all stick together and keep everything in sight. But there's got to be tasks that force you to go against that. Things that need to get done. Against the time constraint, specific locations around the setting, and that, like, you know, have to happen at the same time. Or not, it's not necessarily like, you know, turn two keys at the same time, but it's like, we need this and we also need this.
Mm-hmm.
And now this NPC is doing something they're not supposed to do. They're going off plan. Now the plans are getting shook up. Are they doing that because they're infected, or because, like, you know, they're secretly a heroin addict and they're like, well, if we're gonna, I gotta get my stuff from my bunk, mm-hmm. something like that. They've done something suspicious that endangers the other tasks that need to be done, pulls people in different directions, separates the group.
And so, yeah, these tasks don't have to be like the Among Us stuff where it's like, yeah, go fix the mm-hmm. the wiring of the circuit breaker. I mean, that could be one. That's a pretty good one. But they don't all have to be like that. They can be like, bring a bunch of food from the commissary into the common room
mm-hmm.
so we can all sit here and watch each other and have food for the next, you know, 15 hours while we wait for the storm to pass or whatever. Make sure all the doors and windows are locked, or, like, you know, board up the doors and windows. That can be a task.
Yeah.
Securing
your position, mm-hmm. that's a task. And maybe you can't do that right away. First, you got to go get
supplies
to do that.
That are in the shed.
Right. Let's drag all the furniture in here so that we can mm-hmm. block the doors. Well, you're going to have to leave the room to do that. Are you going to do that by yourself or in small groups? And when you do that, you're going to be out of sight of other people.
Yeah. We haven't talked about NPCs yet, but there does need to be NPCs.
Mm-hmm.
It can't all be player characters, because you're going to need a little monster fodder, but then also just, like, some complications.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of just did some quick math before we wrote this, while we were writing the outline, of just, like, a good recommended number of tasks. And we think that is...
surviving NPCs times two.
Surviving NPCs times two. Thank you. I was like, I'm pretty sure it was surviving. So first off, the risk of infection. We'll get back to the NPCs in a second.
Mm.
But the risk of infection... needs to be very clear, right? Because in the thing, it happens, like, immediately the monster escapes and then somebody's going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
NPC is perfect for that, because then, you know, your players can play the full game rather than getting murked right out the game.
Yeah. Don't... when the monster breaks out of the ice block, don't have it kill a player first thing, because now that player doesn't get to play.
Yeah.
Kill one of these other dipshits.
Right.
And use that moment to show how dangerous it is, mm-hmm. and that then, you know, the guy is now compromised. The guy is now part of the thing.
Right. So that could either be, like, the monster breaks out of the ice block and, like, physically kills the guy, and then you fight the monster off, and, like, okay, it leaves you alone for a bit, and then while you're doing the autopsy,
the guy starts to
wakes
turn.
Up, or, you know, his arm falls off and scuttles away or something yeah. like that. Something that shows that dead people aren't just dead, they become monsters.
Yeah, they are monster now.
Right. So, then that gets us to the surviving NPCs. Right, which is that number mm-hmm. Of recommended, or double that and get the recommended task number. Like, for example, and then also I think just recommends having the number of PC or NPCs be the number of player characters. And then one will get murked right away, mm-hmm. which will give you an odd number. So not every player has an NPC to team up with, and, you know, vice versa.
Yeah. So you can have slightly uneven groups mm-hmm. with multiple tasks to do. And then, yeah. So if there's four players, start with four NPCs.
One gets murked immediately.
One dies as soon as the monster is introduced, and then is also the thing that you use to... tell the players how the infection thing works.
Yeah. And so what that does is it puts the... So not only is this about, like, surviving a monster that's trying to kill you, but it's also, like, don't get infected.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to know exactly how that works. I mean, if you've seen the thing...
Yeah.
I think it works. I think there's no reason to change it, even though your players know it. But, like, it can be very... Insidious is, like, you have to touch it. It has to touch you. You have to touch it. But, like, that can be just, yeah, like a pool of slime or, you know, getting spit on or something like that. So you can do it in very subtle ways. So once they kind of figure that out, then it becomes about, like, not only just, like, don't go outside or the monster will get you. It will be, like, am I locked in with a monster that doesn't know they're a monster yet?
Right.
Right, that psychological aspect of it, of who can I trust and why do I think I can trust them?
Mm-hmm.
Which is another reason why it's good to have multiple NPCs alive in there, is because they can kind of add to that paranoia, where, like, you can make the NPCs do something weird. The NPCs can call out a player
yeah.
for doing something.
Call out a player. If a player is, like, whatever they're doing, we're like, well, I saw you over there for a long time, and what were you doing over there?
Mm-hmm.
The player is going to immediately get hostile with that NPC, really ratchet up the tension in that room, and then we're like, why are you doing that? Are you the monster? And, you know, the great thing to do there is have the NPC not be a monster, yeah. at least not yet. Just, you know, just turn up the distrust, turn up the tension in the moment.
Yeah. And so we talked about, like, some of the tests, right? Like the piercings or fillings, inorganic material test. Right, so if, like, if you have your NPCs all have something that could be used in the test,
mm-hmm.
It adds to it, because it's like, okay, well, I checked to see if his, you know, ear piercing is still there. It's like, okay, it is, okay. But it's like, easily could have lost that.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, yeah, I never had any fill-ins. What, so you're going to kill me because right. I brushed my teeth?
I think when I put this bullet point in, I was like, every one of them should have a potential tell. And now I'm thinking, maybe actually no. A couple of them should have a yeah. tell. But one of them should just not. Like, they mm-hmm. had no tattoos, no fillings, no piercings. And they're just like, I never had any of that. So how are you going to, like, how is this test fair
mm-hmm.
to me? Cast doubt on the testing method. And be like, you're right. We have no... we have no baseline for that, so I don't know if we can actually rely on this. and we can't start killing people just because we think they might be, or because they don't have fillings. That's a line from the movie. You know,
well,
you're gonna kill me because I
brush my teeth.
Yeah.
So the point of that though is, if it's there, if you need it, if you need to cast suspicion off the NPC, you can easily put in, oh, but you see their earring or something, right? Whatever your players decide is going to be the test. But yeah, you shouldn't have that, like, here's a roster of, like, this guy's got a nose piercing, and that's going to come up later.
Yeah. Don't lay it on that thick.
So, yeah, NPCs, they're good to sow chaos. They can be threat to players even when they're not infected, right? The NPC goes a little crazy, gets real paranoid. Maybe the NPC attacks a player or another NPC. And then the player's got to figure out who's infected, if any of them are. Mm-hmm. Which brings us to who is infected and who is not infected. Right, we think this works best when the players don't know who's infected or if they're infected.
Yeah. If they're gonna turn out to be infected, they shouldn't know until the end.
Yeah.
And we'll explain this system.
So, kind of ripping off a mechanic in the, like, Star Wars First Flight, whatever FFG stands for, whatever that game publisher is.
Oh. Fantasy Flight.
Yeah,
Fantasy Flight games.
They're in their Star Wars Force and Destiny book. They had a conflict counter, and that's, like, used in the, you know, with all the Jedi shit. So a great way to have people be infected without them knowing that they're infected until, like, the end is have a, like, infection counter. So, like, certain actions give you a certain amount of points of just, like, exposure, risk-taking.
The other, when you first texted me about it, what it reminded me of is the haunt in House on the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Every time an omen card is drawn, that counter goes up. It's the amount of omens that have been drawn.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, it's a roll under.
Right.
If you ever roll under the amount of haunts, then the haunt is triggered. And so the more haunts have been drawn, the more omens have been drawn, the more likely it is for the haunt to be triggered.
Yeah, but you don't know when that's going to happen.
Or who's going to
do
it.
And in what room. You know.
Yeah.
Great variety, a random variety generator.
Mm-hmm. So the system that we came up with, and we haven't stress tested this, but I think we might give it a whirl for our Halloween this year. So any encounter with the creature, that is 1 point of infection risk. And an infection roll is automatically triggered with physical contact with the creature.
Right. So if the creature attacks and successfully hits the player character, then they're infected.
Mm-hmm. And we should say at the top before we get into this, this works with whatever game system you want to run this with.
Mm-hmm.
This is a separate little counter system, a supplementary system, where you count up these points and the roll is going to be 3d6 at the end. But so every time you encounter the creature, that's a point. Any version of the creature, anybody who's infected, as soon as you know that like that's a point. If it hits you, automatic infection roll.
Well, automatic infection, and then we're talking about what when you roll, why you would roll it, whatever. So, encounter with the creature, 1 point.
Going outside, 2 points.
That's where the monster lives.
That's where it ran away at the beginning. You don't know where it is out there. And just, like, it should be a paranoia and fear-inducing thing to go outside to get something. Or, like, reset the breaker or whatever. Doing something, so we talked about there's tasks that are going to need to be done. If you do something in pairs, you get 3 points, because you can keep an eye on each other, but what if you both get got? Or what if you're doing the thing while your buddy keeps watch?
And your buddy gets you.
Yeah.
Right.
So there is just 3 points for doing anything in pairs, and doing something alone is 5 points.
Right. So if you do something in threes and in triplets, no initial points for just being alone with somebody, right? Because that's how they get you, is when you're alone.
Yeah.
But you can still go outside and pick up some points. You can still encounter a monster in a group of three, and that's still points.
And they can really stack up. If you do something stupid, like I left my flask in the snowmobile, I'm going to just sneak outside and grab it really quick and not tell anybody, do that by myself. Okay, so that's a task alone, 5 points. You went outside, 2 points. And even if you just see the monster, if the play, if the game master puts the monster on the board for a second to like scare you back inside, that's another one.
Yeah.
So you can, and now suddenly, yeah, now you're at 8 points of
infection.
For just
grabbing your flask.
Yeah, for just going to grab your flask. You know, risky behavior is reflected in how quickly the points can stack up.
Right. And so, like, the obvious, like, metagame is the players will try to create groups of three or more to do things in, right? And that's where the, like, the counting, the ticking clock comes in for, like, the tasks. It's like, you can't travel in these big groups and get all the stuff
done. You can't just, like, all seven of you go from room to room
doing all this stuff. And then, even then, you can goose with it or goose it. You know, like the, oh, you're in a group of three, and then the you encounter the monster, and in order not to have a front on conflict or a head-on confrontation with the monster, you have to split up. You have to go into separate rooms, or else one of you is going to get touched, right? So, like, you can force breakdown into smaller groups.
Yeah, if they do that, if they're like, well, this is obviously the safe thing to do. We shouldn't, nobody should be out of anyone's sight ever. Force them to do that by have the monster like run at them down the hallway and they split into different rooms. Break up that clump.
Yeah.
With throw a monster at them.
So you stack up these infection like counter points. And then at like the end of it, right? So you do all the tasks, you have this infection counter value, and like, oh, the helicopter's coming. Then you do, like, the infected roll.
Yeah, then you do the final roll.
And if you roll over, then you're not infected. If you roll under, you're infected. But you didn't know that until just this moment. Like, the players figure it out as soon as the game master figure it. At the same time, the game master and the other players figure it out. So there's no, like, you know, sneaking around, sabotaging. No, there's no real reason to, like, do like the Among Us, you know, social. Well, it's like, oh, well, it's always Taylor. Taylor is spy.
Yeah, so Taylor's the spy.
If we just get him off the board,
yeah,
we have a pretty good chance of surviving. Right.
Nobody's infected. And it's Schrodinger's monster. Schrodinger's like, this is why I thought this was so clever when you first sent me the idea. What it does is it bypasses some problems. Because you could do this a different way. You could pass secret notes, or you could, like, you know, you could direct message, you know, under the table. And we've done stuff like that before, where players have, like, a secret task or are secretly, you know, working against the rest of the party in one way or the other. But there's just, like, you know, it's impossible to not metagame that a little bit if you know ahead of time.
Yeah.
And it's also hard to keep it completely secret at the table without
like, why are you getting disrupted? So many text messages on your phone?
Like, why are you checking texts? Or, like, make everybody leave and call them back one at a time to, or, like, hand out, you know, cards. And now there's, like, a poker element where, like, oh, you got the red card, you're infected. Like, you're trying to look at, like, it's impossible, even if you're trying to be a good sport, to not let that bleed in a little bit. So what this does, by not revealing who is and isn't infected until the very end, based on this counter and a dice roll that doesn't happen yet until the end, and now, you know, say 2 out of the 4 are infected, the thing is, they were always infected. They were infected from, like, the first suspicious thing they did, or the first encounter they had with the monster. And instead of risking any sort of metagaming or having players be a liar or acting in bad faith against the rest of the party, it recontextualizes everything that they did in good faith up until that point as keeping their cover. Because they didn't know they were keeping their cover. They didn't even know they were infected. But now it's come out, and then there's a final confrontation, and you gotta decide, like, is it even safe to get on the helicopter?
Yeah.
Are any of us getting rescued? It might not be, you know, it might be time to just, like, blow all the dynamite so that nobody gets out of here alive because we can't risk it or something.
Yeah. So, a couple things to circle back on with this infection counter. So, let's go to the automatic infection. You got hit by the monster. The monster touched you. So, there's some couple ways to play it. I think that should be an automatic infection, which means if anybody saw that, which I guess you could try to, if you were in pairs, you could try to kill your partner, which is why going in pairs is dangerous, but having a third person there really helps a lot, because then you would have to kill two people.
Yeah.
But, so, like, you could kill your partner, whether it be another player or an NPC, and then you keep your secret. But I feel like it shouldn't be, like, you just get monstered, and then, like, you are now an NPC that the Game Master controls. If you don't like that, if you want, like, some time for the player to make some choices knowing that they're infected, that's where, like, the infection roll could come into play. So it's like, you're infected for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Do an infection roll. That's how much time you have left.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, your infection counters reduce. You start at, like, 10, and then every infection counter reduces your turns or something like that. If you want to give your players some time to play with the, I know I'm infected, what's going to happen to me?
Mm-hmm.
But I think not having them turn right away is going to lead to greater problems.
Yeah. Well, because then you would end up in what I was saying, where they're, like, knowingly acting against the party and potentially, like, trying to keep a secret. And as soon as they, like, make overt action, it's not a secret anymore.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And I think that's good to be that punishing, because direct confrontation to the monster is bad.
Yeah.
The monster is way power. It's too powerful for you to go alone.
And that's, like, the horror movie thing, which, you know, it's a hard thing to do in pen and paper games, because most of the time in pen and paper, like, you're playing characters who have, like, tools to fight back against this stuff, and that's part of the fantasy of it. You're supposed to avoid confrontation. You're supposed to be scared. You're supposed to be paranoid about the people around you. And the monster is not supposed to be a combat encounter that you can win. The monster is supposed to be something that interrupts your plans and risks death every single time it comes up.
Yeah. Exactly. The last little bit is the NPC side of the counter. So, if you're the type of game master who really loves the randomness and, like, making stuff up on the spot and, like, not exactly knowing how shit's gonna go, you could use this infection counter for your NPCs. You can count it up just the same as you would a player character, right? If they do something alone, that's 5 points, etc. And then you can be rolling behind the screen for that, or maybe you just say, when an NPC reaches 10 or 5, then they're automatically infected, and I'm just going to reveal that when it's the most dramatic, right? But you don't have to. You can always just do Well, I guess, you know, it's your approach. That you were saying that that's what you would do is just...
That I think would
just
be
decide when the best time is.
Preference. Yeah, because if I have a couple named NPCs, and I've probably come up with, like, do they have a tell that would be testable? And do they have, like, a weird thing about them that I could use to make them act suspicious? I would want to just, like, play that when it felt right. But you could just track the rolls. You could track the points and roll for them, and allow the dice system to tell you who is and isn't, and when that happens. Yeah.
Anything else?
I don't think so. I'm trying to think if there's anything we missed.
I don't think so.
No.
And if we did, it wasn't important.
Yeah. Must not have been important then. All right. Should we recap?
Best we can.
All right. So, that was how to run the thing. Now I'm curious. I want to go figure out if there was a third movie and... also maybe try and track down this short story.
I'm almost 100%. I'm like 98 there is a 50s
a third movie.
Movie.
A first movie,
a
I
first
guess.
Movie.
Okay, so The Thing. It's a scary story about an Antarctic research station where they pull a thing out of the ice and it kills somebody and then start... Well, I think it actually starts with a dog.
Well, but, in John Carpenter's, it starts with a dog.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Alien creature that kills and then assumes...
Takes over.
However you want it. You know, clones or whatever.
Takes on the appearance of its victims, takes over its victims, mm-hmm. and then can, like, mutate a bunch of claws and teeth and tentacles to do its attacks when it does attack. The setting... Well, that's the something new in our signposting. You're isolated. It's scary. The something new is something you got to figure out in order to stay alive. You got to stay ahead of what its rules are. And in doing so, you're probably going to make some mistakes, which is why we recommend having some NPCs. The ultimate goal being escape or rescue with some sort of time limit and necessary tasks in order to make that happen, mm-hmm. because that's going to feed into the groups and the splitting up and the ongoing risk of encountering the creature and becoming infected yourself. Risk of infection is the big thing. NPCs. Obviously, you don't want to use one of your player characters as the first guy who dies to teach you that the monster is scary. You got to have some dipshits in there to use for that. And also, we had number recommendations to keep the groups uneven and split up.
Yeah, so you want a number of tasks that require the group to split up, right? Because you can't do them all as a single big group, one at a time, because that's going to bust the time constraints.
Mm-hmm.
So you want them to split up, right? You want to have, we were thinking it would be good to have, start with the same number of NPCs as players, and then you kill an NPC off of immediately. So then there'd be less NPCs than players. And that would be a good configuration.
Mm-hmm.
NPCs can be used to kind of create some chaos and, like, add to the paranoia. NPCs can do weird stuff. NPCs can call out players. Even if the player isn't being weird,
mm-hmm.
the NPC can still think they're
weird. It's just
going to
say, that was a weird thing you just did.
Yeah.
What the fuck was that? And you're like, I was just mm-hmm. having my snack over here. Oh, what? Like a creature would?
And so then it all comes down to the who's infected and who's not infected, mm-hmm. Which to keep everything or to remove any possible metagaming, you think a cool idea is you players do not know, the game master does not know who is infected and who is not infected until the very end, where all is revealed throughout doing tasks and playing the session. Players and possibly NPCs, if you want to go that route, will pick up infection counters, right? So, like, if you do something alone, that's a lot of infection risk right there, because that's when they get you, mm-hmm. is when you're alone. So, if you do a lot of things alone, infection risk pretty high, probably going to be infected.
There's a sort of implied, like, there are some implied encounters that you're probably not going to narrate. In that, if someone does the thing where, like, oh, I gotta run, I sneak back by myself to my bunk to get my flask. Mm-hmm. We're like, okay, you do that. I'm not gonna describe everything that happened there because that might be when you got infected, and we're not gonna reveal that until the end, because we're not even gonna know that until the end, until mm-hmm. the role reveals it. Which is why it's a bad idea to do stuff like that, because it puts you at risk of what happened while no one else was looking.
Mm-hmm. And so then at the end, you roll 3d6 against your infection counter.
You're trying to beat your infection number.
If so, you roll
more,
higher.
The more risk mm-hmm. you've accumulated, the harder it is to beat that number.
Yeah. If you roll higher, then you, congratulations, you're not infected. Even if, you know, you went out alone several times, but you just roll 3 sixes and be like, boom.
Boom. Not infected.
I'm just that good.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you stayed with a partner the whole time and you have like a 3 infection score, or I guess a 4. You mm-hmm. need a 4. And you roll all 1s. Oops. Unlucky.
Oopsie.
Yeah. And then, so like that comes at the very end when like the helicopter crests over the hill. And, like, everybody's stoked about getting out. And then it's like, well, hold on. Let's find out.
Yeah.
If anybody's going to turn into a...
This is the moment for the infection, for the infected to either, like, mm-hmm. try and keep their cover and escape, or to, like, kill the remaining people and eat them, I guess.
It's got to gain energy from consuming them.
Yeah. And spreading. Anyway. So, yeah, that was how to run the thing. I think that'll do it for this episode. If you liked that, give it a try. And then head on over to the 2HGM Patreon and tell us about it.
Yeah.
All of our stuff is over on the Patreon now, and everything is in a single free tier. All you got to do is just follow. You'll be able to download any of the RPG stuff that we post, and also just communicate with us. Hang out, do the Discord, tell us episode ideas, have a chance to participate in any of this stuff. It's all on the Patreon now. It's all in one place, and it's free. Yeah. So... join us 2 Wednesdays from now for another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. As always, thank you to the Burning Saviors for the use of the song Pontillo's Finest as the intro and outro to our show.
See you next time.
And we'll see y'all on the next one.